relevant and up-to-date. This is 101.9 High FM.
Welcome to 101.9 High FM. I'm Avi K. This is the Avi on Money Show. It's great to be back. Haven't been here for a couple of weeks. And we're going to get straight into it because right now we are in the heart of tax season. There's a big billboard on the highway that says over 3 million taxpayers have submitted the tax returns. And kol hakavod to SARS, who've really made submitting tax a lot easier. E-filing has made, you know, just that it's made it less complicated. It's straightforward. You go on. If you have everything that you need, it's a lot easier. But the bottom line is there's still about 2.5-3 million taxpayers who haven't submitted their tax returns. And in studio, we've got our resident tax expert, Sean Flaschek from Atom Consulting. Sean, how are you doing?
One and yourself, Avi.
Good. Don't sound too excited. I know you're a tax consultant, but let's try and make this a little bit more energetic. Sean, when are the final dates that people have to get the act together by?
Normal taxpayers, 23rd of November.
And that's for e-filing?
That's for e-filing.
Paper tax files filing is over?
Over, yes. That was yesterday.
Okay, what happens if you are one of those people who are still doing the manual tax returns and you miss the deadline? What do you do?
Get hold of somebody that's got internet connection and get yourself onto e-filing as soon as possible.
Okay, so you can get yourself on. It's not too late. You're not, you know, going to get penalized. Simply change the regime in the way in which you submit your tax and move forward.
Correct.
Okay, great. So again, tax is what date in November?
23rd
of November, and it has to be in by then. Yep. Sean, let's just quickly go through the main documents that people need to have together when they do their tax returns. So the first thing I think that anybody would need is your RP5, which is a statement of what you've earned from an employer during the year.
Correct. So
great.
It's RP5, it's your medical expenses, okay, and your medical contribution certificate.
Great. Are those two different certificates?
No. One is a certificate and the other one is usually a pile of receipts from the chemist, from the doctor, from the dentist, and everything else that is not been refunded to yourself or paid on your behalf by a medical fund.
So put it very simply, when you go to the pharmacy and you get your monthly medication and they say to you, well, there's a levity pay or medical aid's not covering X, Y, and Z, and you sign for it and you whip out your bank card and you pay a couple of hundred rand and then they staple it together in that little purple bag or the brown bag and they give it to you. Most of us just open the bag, take the medicines out.
And put it into file 13.
Well, no, they take that bag and put it in the bin.
Oh, file 13.
13. Thank you, sorry. My first show, my brain's still getting in gear. Those slips need to be taken out and just put in a shoebox until tax time so that you can actually look at them, calculate them. Because 9 times out of 10, those amounts that you paid will be on your medical aid certificate.
No.
Is it not reflected, is not recorded what you had to pay in and what they're not paying?
Nope.
So that's a whole chunk of money that you could potentially be throwing away.
Load of money that you could be throwing away. Because remember, you on medical expenses, you're trying to get to a goalpost.
What is that goalpost?
Okay, the goalpost at the moment is 7.5% of your taxable earnings.
Right.
All right. If you don't exceed that, you can't claim any medical expenses other than your tax credit.
Correct.
You're allowed a monthly tax credit based on that, but if your medical expenses over and above that do not exceed 7.5% of that amount, you can't claim any of it.
That amount of 7.5%, does that include your medical aid premium?
Part of it. There's a very, very complicated formula that was changed for this tax, 2013 tax year and going forward, in that it's now tax credit. So you can't, before you could just take your amounts you were allowed on your contribution certificate and add it to that. Now you can only take what is 4 times the monthly tax credit that you get. You've got to deduct that off the total contribution, whatever's in excess of that, you add onto your medical expenses, which is all the amounts that the medical aid hasn't paid, and whatever exceeds 7.5%, then you can claim.
Okay, I'm totally lost, and I want to clarify that because I actually just want to make it easier for listeners who are doing their own tax return as to what to keep and what not to keep. But let's take a quick break. When we come back, Sean's in the studio. You know the SMS number. It's 34519, or you can email us. The email address is onair@highfm. Or give us a call on 074-654-7335. We'll be back in a moment.
Radio that's better than the rest. This is 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the Avi on Money Show. It's 11 minutes past the hour. In studio with me, Sean Flaschek from Atom Consulting. This is your opportunity to ask all those questions that you have about your tax, your personal tax, your corporate tax, the tax for your parent in the old aged home, all those concerns that you have that you're not quite sure where to turn to. Those of you who are using e-filing, it's a great system, but you might be uncertain as to how to allocate certain things, what documentation to keep, what not to keep. Now is your opportunity to give us an SMS on 34519. Email us on onair@highfm.com and just ask Sean all the questions that you have. He's in the studio for the rest of the hour, and it's really an opportunity just to get all those cobwebs out of your mind. Get your tax in. Tax, Sean, or one of those, was one of those things where you ask a person, have you done your tax? And it is either it's a big smile, yes, and even if they had to pay in, but the monkey's off the back, they've done it. Or there's this look of dread, no. The secret with tax is consistency. It's not done once a year. It's done every single month. Keep all the documentation. Even if your shoebox is just a pile of papers from the pharmacy, from expenses that you have, you know, your wallet has got a section in it just full of slips. Empty it out from time to time and just throw it in a drawer. You can uncrumple them, you know, a week before you want to submit your tax. But if you don't have them, you ain't got nothing.
Correct. If you don't have it, that you've thrown that money away. You might as well take a nice blue note out of your wallet and tear it up and throw it in the bin.
On that note, an SMS has just come through. What is the story with audit? Somebody wants to know, when I'm audited, am I only audited on the documentation that I have submitted, in other words, that I've claimed, or is the audit far broader than that? What is the SARS actually looking for in the audit?
Usually, audits are very specific. They will, well, they'll start off generalized. Okay, in other words, you submit your tax return. Some or other information on that tax return sparks a query. Okay, firstly, it's actually a query. It's not a full audit.
Right.
They will query it and they want to see, because of the fact that we do e-filing, in the old days, you used to take your tax return and attach all the document and then submit it to SARS, and they had all the documentation to do a look through to see if it was valid. Now we work in the electronic age, we don't. So often that inquiry is just SARS asking you to send them the supporting documents that support the amounts that you've claimed on that tax return.
So you're not going to be hit with something coming out of left field. The first place they're going to start is if you put down expenses of 45,000 Rand. They'll say, thank you very much. Please just show us the proof for that 45,000 Rand.
Correct.
And theoretically, you should be able to show the proof on the same day because it's all there.
You should have had it to be able to put that amount on the tax return.
Subtly, what we're saying is don't thumb suck figures. Either you've got them or you haven't got them. If you haven't got them, don't submit them.
Exactly, because at the moment, SARS took a paradigm shift when they moved over to e-filing. Their staff complement used to be basically 80% of their staff used to be used to complete or capture data from returns. When they changed over to e-filing, that dynamic switched over to the opposite way around. They've now got 80% of their staff chasing after and validating returns instead of capturing the information. So your audits, SARS's policy at the moment is they said that every taxpayer supposedly will face an audit every 5 years.
Okay.
Okay. They also then stratify those things. You get a general query, and then certain taxpayers are considered risk taxpayers, or they have an elevated profile. Usually, for instance, commission earners, people with local business or trade, in addition to other income. So those type of things. Also, people that receive large refunds, or a refund that is out of the ordinary. In other words, taxpayer A might have been paying in every year for the last 10 years. All of a sudden, this year, he claims a refund of 15, 20,000. That is going to elevate his risk profile and make him eligible for selection.
And so basically, they'll do an audit. Well, they'll put the two tax returns theoretically next to each other and look for material differences between the two. And those material differences are going to obviously be flagged. So when you submit your tax return, either you're doing it by yourself or you're doing it with your tax consultant or practitioner, be aware that where there's a significant or material difference between last year and this year, that's the first place they're going to look, because it stands out and says, I am different, I have changed. And I just want to see the proof for that. So it's not a witch hunt, it's simply a verification of that which you have submitted.
Correct. And a lot of people sometimes have this opinion that SARS is vindictive or SARS is chasing. You know, SARS has got a job to do. Look, we don't work for SARS. We're consultants, and we're sometimes seen as to be on the other side of the trenches. But they've got a function to do, and they've been enabled with the tools to do so, and that's all they're doing. They're looking for the flags that stick out.
I remember at Varsity, the tax lecturer turned around to us and said, SARS is fair. Now, this is the old SARS. SARS demands something from you, and at the same time, they demand of themselves. These are the guidelines on which they play. Give them what they need, and the problem goes away. Don't give them what they need, or try to be clever with them, and you're just exacerbating the problem. I know I'm oversimplifying it, but the point I'm trying to make is that when you submit your tax return, you're signing that it's true and honest. So make sure that you've got everything there to verify. You might not have every penny, but then don't be upset when things are disallowed because you haven't got the proof for that which you've submitted.
Correct, especially when SARS is, or most of the legislation is based on what you have actually incurred. So you can't say, well, my expenses were round about this amount. They're not interested in it. They want to see what did you actually spend on an expense.
On that note, let's just take something else. If you have incurred an expense, so for example, you have incurred an expense of 40,000 rand for your business or during the year, but you actually haven't paid it. You've financed that. So you've got an invoice that says you owe company X 40,000 rand. They've given you a payment option over 3 or 4 years and you are paying it off. What amount can you claim in year one?
All right, you've got to just be careful on when you say that you've incurred an expense and you've financed it.
Okay.
When it comes to, for instance, motor vehicles, that's a whole different kettle of fish. But other equipment, for instance, you bought a photocopier.
Right.
For the office and you financed it. Okay. That would be considered a capital purchase.
Okay.
So then it would fall into a point that you bought this item, but you're allowed a wear and tear allowance to deduct it over a number of periods. And there's a strict guideline from SARS as to how many years you can write that item
off. The fact that you're paying it off is actually irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
Okay, but you actually owe money on that. You've incurred the liability, and therefore the write-off on depreciation kicks in, and it works that way.
Yes, with the exception of where it is a lease on a motor vehicle.
Okay. Okay. So how does a lease work then?
In a lease, SARS works strictly over in the legal form of something. Okay, whereas in, from the accounting and accounting world, we sometimes overlook that and look at more of this, the substance over the legal form. On the accounting world, we would always capitalize it. Whether it's a lease or it's an installment sale, it makes no difference. Because at the end of the day, you're buying that asset.
Right.
From a tax point of view, SARS works to the letter of the law.
Okay.
If it is a lease, he will allow you the full installment payment as a deduction.
Okay.
Right? Whereas if it's an installment sale, you are only entitled to the interest portion.
Now, that's very important. Let's take a fact that you bought a vehicle for 5 grand a month.
Correct.
Theoretically, the interest portion of that is 1,000 rand. If it's a lease, you're getting a deduction of 60,000 rand a year.
Correct.
If it's an installment, you're getting a deduction of 6,000 rand a year, which is the interest, 1,000 times 12. So 12,000. No wonder you were smiling at me. So it's a small portion. And those are little things that you really need to be aware of. One thing that I say repeatedly is make sure you go to a financial planner who's a qualified CFP, a certified financial planner, has the experience and the qualification, someone that you're comfortable with, someone that you can relate to. The same thing with your tax practitioner. If you need to sit down with your practitioner and you can't really bare your soul as to what's going on, you're only looking for trouble. It's so much easier when you're with somebody who's comfortable, who's competent, who knows what's going on. Not someone who's going to necessarily give you the refund, but somebody who's going to give you the full picture and tell you what you can or can't do. This that we've just discussed now, the difference between 60,000 and 12,000 is a huge amount of money. If they're both deductible, The one means you're going to pay a lot of money. In the latter case, in the former case, there's a very good chance that you won't pay anything or even get a deduction. So it's just a matter of structuring it correctly. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back shortly.
Connecting our community. Choose life. Choose Hive. 101.9 Hive FM.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. This is the Avi on Money show, and the time is 21 minutes past the hour. In studio with me is Sean Flashek of Atom Consulting. Sean is our resident, or at least on this show, the resident tax expert. And we've just been through the whole dynamic as to what paperwork to have together. Sean, we got stuck on the medical side. So it's your RRP5, it's your medical. What else do you need to have together?
Income protection policy.
Right, disability policies. No, okay.
Okay, RAs, your retirement annuity certificates.
Right. For those accountants out there who still refer to them as RAFs, yes, it's the same thing, and you need those also.
Okay, and then we start to get into where it starts to diverge depending on the individual taxpayer's situation. If they have investments, shares, etc., you need to have some documentation. Usually it's a statement from the brokerage, showing you what all the trades were, for instance, in shares, and your capital gains and losses.
In other words, if you sold an asset during the year,
correct.
That's very, very important to make sure you have proof of that.
Also, what a lot of people forget about is if you've sold your home in a year.
Right.
People say, oh, yes, but it's a personal use asset.
Up to a certain point.
You still need to declare it.
Okay.
It doesn't incur any tax. But if you don't declare it, SARS will pick it up. They run your ID number through the deeds office, and oh my word, Mr. K, you sold your house this year and you didn't tell us about it.
And the value was more than 2.5 million rand, and you happen to have another house also. So which one is your primary residence?
Correct.
So all of a sudden that changes.
Or it just opens the can of worms. It may have no tax impact at all, but the fact that you didn't disclose it, they now start looking at everything else.
And this is not about keeping SARS at bay. This is about sleeping at night knowing that your tax return is absolutely open and honest. Because if you don't do that, it'll catch up with you somewhere. Just put it down. And also, if you're using a tax practitioner and you've done it properly in year one, it should follow on in the subsequent years going forward. Because your practitioner will say to you, what happened to this asset and what happened to this asset? You know, you told me during the year that you did X, Y, and Z on this. I've got notes for it. Where are those assets? Where are those liabilities? And those are the important things to be aware of. Sean, what is the case about commission earners? You said before that commission earners automatically get an eyebrow raised from SARS. What is specific about a commission earner that is different to a fixed income earner? And I'm not talking about the obvious. I'm talking about the way in which the tax return is submitted. What are the fundamental differences?
Okay, basically, the difference between a normal salaried individual and a commission earner is that you're relying on different sections of the Act.
Okay.
Okay. A salaried person will have his RRP5 and the allowances will show on there, and you're allowed to claim the lesser of the actual expenses or the allowance.
Okay.
Okay, and it's all laid out in the RRP5. A commission earner has to validate their expenses. In other words, you get a commission statement from wherever you earn your income. Like, for instance, an estate agent. An estate agent doesn't necessarily get an RRP5.
Okay.
You know, they earn income on each sale. Then they've got to now take into account all the expenses. So they have to rely on a different section of the Act because it's in the production. They're claiming expenses that are incurred in the production of the income. That's where the fundamental difference lies.
Okay. That also goes into a murky gray area because there's expenses in the production of income, and there's expenses of just living on a daily basis, and then there's expenses that have got nothing to do with income. What happens if they all relate to one vehicle, one petrol tank, and then I'm talking about your vehicle and your fuel and all that you use? How do you differentiate between going to the shops on a Sunday morning, going away on a holiday, and driving around every day trying to do business?
Well, there's that little nasty word comes out again, the logbook.
Okay.
You still, whether you're claiming expenses on an allowance or whether you're claiming travel as part of an expense against income, you still have to submit that logbook. Or you still have to have the logbook information available in case they ask for it.
Okay. Let's take a minute to discuss it. Again, the SMS number is 34519. Please send us an SMS or a Skype or an email on air@chaifm.com. And let's see if we can handle all your questions. I've asked a few of them that have come through. In the old days, Sean, a logbook was very simple. It was a neat little looking book where you put in the date, the odometer reading, the mileage on your car, the amount that you spent on fuel or oil or whatever it was, the little service, and that was good enough. SARS has now gone one step further and said, okay, that's all good and well, but between the one opening balance and the closed other balance, it was between that tank of petrol, where did you go? That's what they want to see. They actually want to see how many kilometers you traveled. My first reaction was that is just, it's impossible.
They even go further than that. They want to know the client that you visited too.
Absolutely. Okay. But every time, for example, in my practice, I'm a financial planner. I don't go out a lot to see a lot of clients. Grateful a lot of clients come to me. But I needed to get into my head that when I got into my car, if I wasn't going home, I needed to quickly jot down what the reading was and what it was when I got to the client. And then what it was when I got back to the office or got home. And it became very, very laborious and very tedious and, in a way, unwieldy, impractical, and almost impossible to keep up on an ongoing basis. Where's the compromise between doing the right thing and having it manageable?
Well, there isn't really a compromise. I mean, everything to do with money takes work.
Right.
You know, so if you're not prepared to do the work, you're not going to save the money. Or you're not going to be able to have all the information to claim that deduction. So it's a personal thing. You know, you've got to decide, are you prepared to do the work to get the money? You know, it's all about homework. If you do the homework, you get it.
And if you don't, you get nothing. So it's just a matter of keeping it and having it all there. Okay, so you need to keep your logbook, and the logbook will really show you what you've done, where you've gone, and all those type of things. Okay, the other thing with a commission earner is that basically every item that you spend goes towards your business. Stationery, hardware, software on your computer, entertainment. Let's spend a minute talking about entertainment. There's two questions that have actually come through about that. Is that what entertainment is deductible and what isn't deductible? You know, you'll see people sitting around a table, they'll be fighting over the slip because everybody wants that slip to deduct. Yet they're a group of friends going out for dinner. It's got to be a very clear line as to what is a business expense and what's a personal expense.
Well, yes. You know, obviously you've got to be able to substantiate that expense. You know, they can say, well, SARS has at some investigations and you present your entertainment and they've said, right, you went to XYZ restaurant, but it was on a Sunday. You know, do you really work on a Sunday? Or that at some investigations they even ask, well, which client was it? And they request contact details for the client and ask, then independently contact the client and say, did Mr. So-and-so actually take you out to lunch? So on that date.
What I've started doing for my business expenses when I entertain clients or I have a business meeting that I've paid for is on the back of the slip, I write the client's name.
That's a good practice to do because then you don't have to try and remember.
Absolutely.
It's all about getting that workload down. You know, if you can get the workload of administering your tax affairs down, do it. And it's often the little things like that, just writing on the slip, it was for XYZ.
So there's no reason to remember. You don't have to think back. It's there. You know, the client might not remember that you took him out for lunch 6 months ago, but the bottom line is you got your paper trail and you've got it all there. Sean, the other thing that really gets a lot of people bogged down when it comes to running your own business is keeping a detail of all the expenses. And I think there again, it's very, very simple. If you're running a small business or a medium-sized business or a big business, it's all about systems. You know, a gentleman who runs a plumbing business and gives you an invoice the moment he's finished doing the work, writes it out on the bonnet of his bucky and gives it to you, and there's a carbon copy below that he keeps in the invoice book, that is good practice. The fact that it doesn't come printed out on a computer printout from a software package is actually irrelevant. The bottom line is he's got a mechanism of tracking it. And all those things need to be kept. So if you are not giving invoices on time, if you're not collecting your money on time, if you're not running that side of your business correctly, your tax affairs cannot be in order.
Correct. You know, and we see it in our practice. The clients that have their affairs in order are the ones that are the most successful. The ones that we are chasing 4 or 5 months down the line for documents and information, those are the ones that are battling. Or that the, you know, the wheels start to fall off very quickly. The ones that have everything in order, and when we request something, we get it within the day or the following day, those are the ones that are successful or have the best chance at being successful.
And again, it's not rocket science. It's just it's a matter of putting processes in place that allow you and give you the efficiency to run this thing on an ongoing basis without having to panic as to where to find them. If you've got them, they're there. Again, those of you who aren't neat and tidy and not absolutely anal about paperwork, use a shoebox. Take everything you've got and just throw it in there. One Sunday afternoon, sit down with a liter of Coke and a bag of biscuits and plow your way through that box. Put everything in categories. Put it in sequential order. Staple it, and then it's done. You might want to do it once a month. You know, that dreaded 10 minutes in the evening, you do it, and then it's over. But if you're not going to do that, then don't expect your tax to be simple.
And that's correct. You know, do it in small chunks. You know, it's that old adage of how do you eat an elephant? You know, one mouthful at a time.
Absolutely.
When it's in small little bits, it's so much easier to, you know, if you leave it and you leave it and leave it and you get this mountain of stuff you've got to go through, your mind just becomes overwhelmed and thinks, I can't deal with this. You know, it's too much to handle or it's too much to go through. But when it's broken down into small chunks or done on a regular basis, it's just so much easier.
Right. There's a lot of questions coming through about retirement annuities. Before we go there, let's just summarize. Have all your paperwork in place. Collect it over the year. If you can keep it tidy on an ongoing basis, it'll make your life a lot easier. Keep every shred of evidence that you can. You don't need to file it. You just need to keep it. You can file it once a year. Again, the little trick that I do is I write back on the back of the entertainment slip who I entertained, so I don't have to go back and look in my diary. It's there and it's clear. And then I've got a name and a date, and then I can go to my diary and match it up if I need to. And also remember that when you submit your tax return, everything on there you're verifying or you're vouching is correct and honest. Make sure you've got paperwork to back it up. If you do, they can audit you all you want, or they want rather. It'll take a short time. All your paperwork is in place, and it's all neat and tidy.
Just touching on that again, we also find that clients that are investigated, the quicker we can get the information to SARS, I mean, they give you 21 working days to reply. The ones where we get the information back to SARS, within 2-3 days of us receiving that notice, SARS very seldom you ask further questions. If they receive it back quickly, all the documents there, straightforward and open, SARS generally says, okay, they're happy with it. But when it's received on day 23...
And they can see you've scrounged it together.
And it's been scrounged together, and it's little shreds of information here and there, and, you know, the tax practitioner has been given it on day 21, and he's had to rush through it overnight to get it through to SARS. And there's formula errors or something doesn't add up in that, that's when SARS starts to dig further.
Simply, just play by the rules.
Yep.
If you are in business, just see tax as a monthly thing that you need to do, just like you do your VAT, just like you pay your salaries employees. Do it on an ongoing basis. Those of you who have it simple and work on salaries and your RRP5 basically has everything and you have a little bit of other income, what Sean and I have done, we've actually done two scenarios now where we're looking at retirement annuities as a tax calculation, and we're going to look at two scenarios. One where someone is an employee and they get an IRP5 and it's straightforward, and the other one where is somebody is a commission earner, and we're going to look at the two different scenarios and see how we put them together. Very simply, there's an SMS here from Jeremy. What is a retirement annuity in a nutshell? So what a retirement annuity is that it came out of the need for the private individual to have a similar benefit as a pension fund. Private individuals turned around to SARS 20, 30 years ago And said, why am I being penalized that because I'm not on a job and I'm self-employed or I don't have a pension fund that I can't get those deductions, I can't get those savings advantages? And that's where retirement annuity came into place. Trevor Manuel then really took it to the nth degree, and he started reducing the tax that you would pay on the growth of your RA until in his last year as minister, he reduced it to zero. And not only the tax, the capital gains tax, any tax that could be attracted in retirement annuity has been stripped out. So that's really what it is. It's a saving mechanism that saves from a point in time today until retirement age, which can be anything from 55. It used to be 70. It can now be open-ended. And you can buy RAs that are open-ended, that don't have a maturity date. So that's what an RA is. What you get with an RA is you get a tax deduction. Sean, what is the tax deduction in principle that you're getting on an RA? How does it work?
Basically, SARS will allow you the an amount, a deduction of an amount up until, there's a couple of lower brackets, but just to simplify it, that will allow you up to 15% of your taxable income prior to medical expenses and donations.
And pension.
Less the amount that you're paying on a pension.
Okay.
Okay.
So in other words, the medical aid, the donation comes out, and then your pension comes out?
No, no, no. Your taxable income prior to medical expense deductions.
Okay.
So they're actually giving you a larger amount.
Yes.
Okay, because 15% obviously before you've taken medical expenses is a bigger amount. So they're allowing you that larger amount to be used as a deduction.
Okay. To clarify it, that's what we call non-retirement funding income. In other words, your income that is not pensionable.
Is not being used as a basis of calculation for your pension fund.
Great. So those of you who do not have a pension fund or a provident fund, if you don't have anything that's being deducted off your salary or you're self-employed, take all your income together, your income that you earn from your business, your rental income. I think you don't have to worry about your dividends, and I don't think you have to worry about your interest up until a certain amount.
If you're earning interest that is over and above the threshold,
right,
that you must add on to it as well.
Okay, but that's a huge amount of capital that you'd need.
You'd need a lot of capital to exceed that threshold.
So really just take your income, take your rental income that you're getting. And there we're talking about net. Don't put that in your mind. Don't say, well, I'm getting 10 grand a month from my tenants, but I have to pay rates and taxes, and I have to pay services, and I have to pay maintenance. In your mind, keep it as a net figure as to what are you actually putting in your pocket. Correct. After your income, less your expenses
on the trade. Yep.
Take 15% of that. And what I've seen time and time again is people look at that figure and they're like, are absolutely gobsmacked. Is that the amount I could use as a tax deduction? And the answer is yes. The next step is, well, I can't afford that.
That is a bit of a conundrum, because you've got to balance the tax deduction with the affordability.
The answer to that often is, what would happen to you if you were on a salary, if you were a salary where you had a pension fund? That amount would be coming off regardless.
Correct.
And you wouldn't have a choice.
You wouldn't have a choice about it.
Yes. So the answer might be, well, that's why I don't have it, because I can't afford it. On the other hand, the deduction that you're actually paying for, the pension, the amount that you're putting away, a good chunk of that is going into savings. It's not necessarily going to pay your risk benefits. That's the saving portion that you're putting away. But I think that's a discussion for maybe for more of a retirement scenario, and to convince yourself and condition yourself to save. Okay, so Sean, the bottom line is it's 15% of your salary if you're not paying a pension. If you are paying a pension, it's the 15% of that portion that's not pensionable. And if you are paying a pension on your whole salary, well then, I think it's 143 rand a month or something.
But yeah, you still use that amount, because very often not the entire salary is pensionable.
Fantastic. Let's take a quick break. There's a huge amount of questions. Thank you, everybody, for sending them in. Just again to remind you, the SMS number is 34519. And tell you up front, I'm not going to be able to get to every question, but I have written down your numbers and I will contact you afterwards. So please get them coming in. And if you need me to put you in touch with Sean, we'll do that. But let's take a quick break. We'll be back shortly afterwards.
From talk to music, from Johannesburg to Israel, from sport to business, this is 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. This is the Avion Money Show. It's 19 minutes to the hour. Thank you, everybody, for your tremendous enthusiasm about getting your tax in on time and asking all the questions. I've tried to incorporate your questions as I've gone through. Sarah and Jerry, I asked Sean the question before about how to incorporate the medical stuff. I hope I've answered your question. If not, please email me on avi@highfm.co.za. I'm not a tax expert. I will advise you if I can, but I will then, you know, tell you where to go or where I think you should look at to get the correct advice. When it comes to tax, really use somebody who knows what they're doing, not because it's, you know, you'll get better advice. At the end of the day, you'll just save yourself a lot of heartache and a lot of time. Bad advice when it comes to tax is an absolute nightmare. Good advice when it comes to tax, it might not be what you want to hear, but it'll allow you to sleep at night properly for a longer period of time until you have to do it again next year. Sean, we've discussed what an RA is. Let's look at a scenario that we've done here, and it's going to be quite a challenge to just verbalize what we're seeing here on paper. But very simply, we've got an individual who's earning 45,000 Rand a month. He's got a travel allowance of 6,000 Rand, and he's also got a rental income of 6,000 Rand. Thank you, Kathy. Kathy just corrected me. My email address is avi@highfm.com, not .co.za. Thank you very much for that. His income is 57,000 Rand. He is paying towards an RA 27,000 Rand over the year, correct?
Yes, he's entitled to contribute 27,000 for the whole year.
In a scenario where he doesn't contribute, he's going to pay tax of how much?
Pretty much 150,000 Rand a year.
And if he does spend the 27,000 Rand, he's going to be paid tax off 140.
So it's essentially 10,000 Rand he's saving.
Correct. So he's saving 10,000 Rand there on tax, but he's spent 27,000 Rand to get the 10,000 saving.
Correct.
Don't confuse it. A lot of people think, well, whatever I put in the RA is going to be used as a tax deduction. That's not the case.
No. It's a portion of it.
It's a portion of it. Right. So we've already saved this guy roughly 10,000 Rand on his tax bill. But when we look down the calculation, going a little bit further down, what is the receiver actually aided the gentleman or the person in saving by using a retirement annuity?
Well, basically, on this specific example, the RA he was paying was 27,000 for the year.
Right.
SARS, if you look at it from this point of view, SARS is funding 10,260 of that.
How?
By the tax deduction.
Okay.
In essence, he's only paying 16,000 Rand of that.
And he's getting a 10,000 Rand tax deduction.
Yep.
It's something that I've heard so many times over the years that is absolutely nauseating, is that an RA, or my dad told me that an RA is a terrible investment. I said, and what did your dad say about unit trust? No, those are great. So I said, well, what I say is it's very simple. The underlying asset allocation could be absolutely identical. The one you're getting a tax deduction, you're not paying any tax now or if you put it into preservation until you retire. Please show me where it's a bad investment. The only way it can be a bad investment is if your underlying asset allocation is not optimum.
Correct.
You've gone into a smooth bonus fund that over a period of time isn't giving you the returns that fixed interest would have given you over a period of time. A scenario like that, and again, is very unlikely. So it's really the underlying asset allocation that's important. An RA is a phenomenal way to save money. I must clarify it and qualify it. It's not the only way to save money. There are many, many ways to do it. But not to take advantage of your RA in your tax calculation is basically throwing money away.
And also, I mean, just from an accountant, and you know, when we talk to entrepreneurs about it in our practice, is that it's a forced saving. Because most RAs you have to sign a debit order because it's got to go off every month. You know, and that's the thing. People fall by the wayside in their retirement plan because they're not contributing every single month. You know, they think, okay, if I have a good month, I'll contribute twice. Or I'll pay in 10,000 Rand into my investment or my saving or my unit trust or something.
I'll wake up at the end of January and I'll see what my tax allowance actually is, and then I'll pay it in. 9 times out of 10, or 99.99% of the time, you're not going to have the cash flow to be able to do that.
Correct. And I read a very good book. It's It's an American book, but you can, you know, if you just translate the values to South Africa, but the principle stays the same. It's called Automatic Millionaire. And one of the key points he keeps emphasizing on is, who is the most important person in your financial plan? Yourself. Pay yourself first. Pay everybody else after that. But always pay yourself first. And that's the way to get your retirement plan done properly, to be able to retire.
The one thing I emphasize a lot is that I often see the other end of the scenario, where I've got a retired couple coming to me, a retired person coming to me and say, I bought this RA, it's been an absolute dead horse all the time. It's been a total waste of time. For my first question, well, then why did you keep it? But you did anyway. When you actually strip it all away, number one, that person wouldn't have saved. Number two, the return is not as bad as they think it is, because often they've got an amount in their mind, I don't know where they get it, that they should have. The reason you haven't got the amount that you should have is because you haven't put away enough. You know, compound interest is magic, but you need to have the serum to start it with. You need to have something to invest. You need to have a seed to plant in order for the tree to grow.
Yeah, you're getting a 25% return or a 10% return, and that, if you're only getting 10% of 1 rand, it's not a lot of money.
Absolutely. And it's all about putting it together and structuring it together. Okay, when it comes to the RA and you're submitting your tax, what documentation do you need? Just your RA certificate?
One page. And they don't even ask for that page. They only ask for the page if there's a query. But obviously you need the amount off the page. Slot in the total of your RA contributions. And it doesn't necessarily have to be from one fund. You just group them all together, add them all up, one amount on the tax return.
Great. So those of you who have a financial planner and you have RAs with different companies, the financial planner, if the financial planner is an agent, will be able to get you the company that they work for almost immediately. I'll go online and they will email it to you. It literally takes 5 minutes. If they are a broker and they have multiple RAs, they again will be able to go online with the different companies and get them for you. Please do not call your financial planner at 10 to 5 and say, I need to have my tax in by this afternoon. Please get them to me. It's possible, but give a bit of notice and send an email and say, please can I have all my certificates? 9 times out of 10, you've already got them. They're sitting either in your inbox, which you haven't bothered to open, or in that mail that you haven't opened for 3 months either. So go and look for it. It's most probably there. It's not a bad idea to get duplicate copies so you can just verify you have everything. But it's really, really important to have those certificates. Get them done. Get them in time.
Or nowadays, I mean, with technology, we're actually really spoiled. What we tell our clients is, as soon as that item arrives in your mailbox, forward it onto us. The tax practitioner has it already then.
Okay, and again, I know that saying that I do. The moment my RRP5 becomes available, I send it off to my tax practitioner. Hopefully he's still got it. You do have it, Ashok.
Yes, I do.
It's all there. And that's one less thing that I have to worry about at that particular time. Okay. People are asking, or not people, one particular person is asking about about potholes. What are the things that people should really, really be careful about? You do everything, you submit it correctly, but I think from the tone of the email, or of the SMS rather, is this something that I must just be aware of that I can inadvertently walk into and that can open up a whole can of worms? So we're running short of time. It's 10:02. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back shortly afterwards.
The best part of your day. At the heart of your community. All the talk. All the music. All the news. Chai FM.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. This is the Avi on Money Show. It's 9 minutes to the hour. And in studio with me is Sean Flaschek of Atom Consulting. We've had a tremendous amount of SMSs that have come through and emails that have come through asking questions about tax, all the concerns that you have about it. The one that came through just before the break, Sean, was, in a nutshell, what are the pitfalls about which people should be aware? So that was terribly phrased. Are there certain things that people should be aware of when they're submitting the return? You think you're doing everything well, everything fits in, all the boxes are ticked, everything's filled in nicely, but is there a way that you can open up a can of worms inadvertently?
There is, and a lot of the time in our practice, we find this in that a client's done one or other financial transaction and hasn't consulted us first. They've gone and done the transaction, sold something, bought something, entered into an agreement with something, and then they want us to fix it after the fact, and it's very difficult to unscramble scrambled eggs once it's already been done. So if you're going to do any transaction or enter into anything that possibly can have a financial impact, run it through your tax practitioner or your accountant first.
We're not saying that your tax consultant or your tax practitioner or your accountant needs to guard every aspect or detail of your business. You'd never get anything done like that.
Correct. Just give him the material facts and say, I want to do this.
What are the
tax implications? Or is this the best way to deal with something?
In your experience, what is a scenario like that that you've seen that's, you know, a person does something almost innocently, and then when it came to tax, there was just this dragon staring at you?
Well, we have silly little things. Person buys, they're living in a house. They buy a new house while they're still busy trying to sell the old house. All the transfers taking a bit long. And they move out of their current house and they move into the new house because it's all nice and pretty and you want the new house and all the nice, you know, you want to live in your nice new house. And they forget. Well, then what happens is something goes wrong with that transfer of the previous property.
And there's a delay.
And there's maybe an 8-9 month delay. You can fall into a pitfall in it. So I can say, that house that you sold wasn't your primary residence. You haven't lived in it for 9 months.
Right.
You're living in another house. And they will try and attack you on that and say, you now need to pay capital gains tax on that. So, you know, be very careful of little timing differences like that. Also to do with donations. Donations is another favorite. Oh, I want to give my son a donation. Okay, but I need to give him, I got to pay him something in the week's time. And that week's time is the 24th of February.
Right.
And he pays him 200,000 rand. 100,000 of it gets nailed for donations tax.
Correct.
If you delayed, made the payment in two installments, paid one on the 24th and paid one on the 1st of March, there would be no donations tax.
Very interesting.
Just timing.
And the other thing that that's talked a lot about in theory and in conferences is where you owe somebody money. You've gone to somebody, you've borrowed 100,000 rand, you're battling to pay it back, you go and approach that individual, the individual says, you know what? Give me 50 cents in the rand. I'm happy to forego it, whatever. It's a brother, it's a family member, it's a very wealthy individual. That's a donation. That 50,000 rand that you are not paying back, you are receiving as a donation, mm-hmm. and there's an implication of that. How does that work?
Okay, well, that would be from the part of the giver.
Right.
Or the donee. Or, sorry, donor.
Right.
The donee, there's no impact on him. He receives that amount. It's no problem. It's for the donor to declare it. And correct. That's the difficult part, is that there's no register of donations.
Right.
You know, there's no registry office. You won't go to, like, there's no deeds office for donations. It's up to the person's moral fiber as to whether they declare it. But if you don't declare it and you get caught, the penalties are severe.
So you're doing a kindness. You're getting penalized or taxed on your kindness. If you don't declare your kindness, you're going to get penalized on it. So the bottom line is that continue to do your kindness, just discuss it with the tax practitioner and make sure that you have a paper trail of everything. Another thing when it comes to donations is people make donations. They're not aware that the people they are making it to are not a registered charitable organization that they can get the deduction for. So please make sure that you give your charity, and if you're expecting to use it as a tax deduction, that the people you're giving to actually can give you a receipt and show you that they are the registered organization.
Correct. I mean, you're entitled to claim donations up to 10% of your income, provided you've got a registered PBO certificate for it. That qualifies under Section 18.
Where I learned this the hard way was with a client with BEE. Where they were giving donations to certain organizations in order to get BEE points. And the organization that they were giving the money to gave them certificates, which were rejected. And what they were doing, they were simply involved in the wrong department of that particular organization. The moment they went to the right department, not only did the problem go away, but the deduction increased. Because it was handled correctly. So just make sure that everything is done correctly, right organization, correct paperwork, and right registration.
And do your homework. Don't just accept the certificate.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
There are fraudulent certificates all over the show. And it's, you know, in the technological era we live in, it's so easy to amend those things and create your own fictitious one, go and look on the Department of Social Welfare's website. They've got the people that are accredited. Type in the name, see, does it pop up? Often you'll find it does pop up, but next to it it says, no longer registered.
The bottom line is that do your homework, don't do your tax at the last moment, do it on an ongoing basis. Again, Sean's email address is www.atomconsulting.co.za. This organization can be in touch with. What have I said wrong now?
You see, my email address is www.
The web address, www.atomconsulting.co.za. I'm having a problem with addresses today. I've already said that my email address was incorrect. It's avi@chaifm.com. It's been great to be back. It's been great to be back in the studio. If you have any financial planning issues, any tax issues, please be in touch with me. I'll be more than happy to assist you or to point you in the right direction. Look forward to chatting to you on Thursday on the Avi on Business Show. We've got a great lineup coming up. Those of you who remember the CBD fondly but haven't ventured there for a long time, I think it's time to brave up a little bit and venture back into where the heartbeat of Joburg started and where the pulse is coming back. It's great to have been with you. We'll see you on Thursday. Bye-bye.